If you have a Bible with you this evening, you'd be well inclined to turn to 1 Samuel, back in the Old Testament, chapter 17. 1 Samuel 17. While you're turning there, let me just underscore what was said in the announcements earlier about the dinner this afternoon. It was spectacular. Those who had any part in putting together the food, thank you so very much. The only problem was there was way too much and there was nobody to stop me from the damage I did to myself. But I really appreciate all the good food, and especially, as was mentioned, it's amazing how everybody was so willing to get ready for it and then afterward to clean up after. On the way home, I was commenting to Benita how fast things had gone to get things back. It's just like ants and the way they work together. And perhaps that's not the best illustration to use or the best thing to say about you, but very ant-like. It's nice to see you working together, all of us. 1 Samuel 17. We're going to do a bit of reading this evening, but you know, there are 52 weeks in the year, and we're going to read 52 verses. And if you'll pay attention, for the next 20 minutes or so, as your life can change in just a year's time, if you look at the text we're about to read and make application in your own life, things can turn around in the next 52 verses. And so as we read this, think not just about the story that you know you've heard before, you've heard from childhood, but think about what this might mean in application even today for you and for me. 1 Samuel chapter 17, we begin with verse number 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Socah, which belongs to Judah, then camped between Socah and Azekah in Ephes-Damon, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and his arm with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. And then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves. Let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistines said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest. And the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son David, "Take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000 and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them." Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. Now the words which David spoke were heard. They reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Moreover, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hands of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them." So David took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David. And the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, but for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it into our hands." So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the enemy to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone And he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Sherem, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Now that was not a story you hadn't heard before. It's always good to read it from the source and see the actual words of the Bible. Oftentimes we hear it in song or hear it in digested form in a brief summary of the events. But I'll remind you of some things perhaps we've all forgotten, at least with respect to how they apply to situations today. Because, you see, we all have our giants to face. I appreciate what Brother John said in his prayer about those matters that each of us face that oftentimes we don't even know about, that others don't know about, but we all have our giants to face. Some are not as obvious as this one. But this one in the story stands as an example of other such giants, because Goliath seems to be such an impossible foe to match up with. Besting him would be just out of the realm of any kind of possibility or imagination. You've probably heard it before that the cubits put to our system of measurement would give us a man in the neighborhood of 9 feet tall. Now, we've got some pretty tall basketball players, but 9 feet beats the best of them in terms of height. But have you seen some of the tallest of the tall basketball players? They're pretty thin. This man, when you see the armor he's carrying, the weight of his javelin, for example, the weight of his coat of mail, he is a big and a burly and tall monster of a man, some 9 feet in height. And he wasn't just a man, he was a warrior who had been such from his youth. And now he had the years of experience behind him. Now it may seem that whatever giant you're facing is kind of like that with respect to how you see it. It's a hill too high to climb. It's a foe too masterful and overwhelming to overcome. It's impossible to imagine overcoming this obstacle in my way. I've got a giant I'm facing. But here's what we sometimes miss from the story. The largest giant that David was facing was not the one across the valley. In fact, when all was said and done, that was the easiest giant to face and best. In fact, did you notice we did a lot of reading before we got to what many kids call the good part. The good part's when you have that one stone, you put it in the sling, it goes round and around, and the song, you know, talks about it going round and around and around and around, and then it flies out, hits the giant in the forehead, and he goes down. The whole story, when it comes down to the action part of it, is just a very few words and would take a very short time in film to put out. Most of the giant being faced are in the verses before that. And to show you what I mean, you notice, what verse is it here? It's verse number 11. Before David even comes into the picture, this taunting had been going on for these 40 days, morning and evening. And what was the reaction of all the other Israelites? In addition, along with Saul, the king, it says they were dismayed and greatly afraid. And by the language that David's brother uses, and by the language that others use, and by the armament Saul tries to get him to wear, it's obvious that's the consensus of everybody on the side of God. We can't win this one. It's impossible. And they were afraid. Well, as you know, David takes his shot, fells the giant, and it's all said and done. But to get there, David has to face the giants of what would have to be his own fear, the naysayers of those who should be encouraging him, and in lack of that encouragement, they should have been doing it themselves before this fact, and even the naysaying of his own family. The most difficult battles we face aren't the real battles themselves. They're the battles we have in our mind before the battle ever starts. And because of that, so many of us lose before we ever take a step or have a start. We've lost it up here. We've lost the battle in the mind because fear overwhelms us. What could be? What might happen? What's the worst case scenario? And if I do this, then this will happen. But if I do this, then this will happen. And if I make this play, well, it's going to mess up this over here. And we're trying to play, we think we're playing chess. We're not even playing checkers. We're barely playing tic-tac-toe. All the while, God is playing three-dimensional chess. If we'll just allow him, in submission to him, allow him to do through us what he always has done. And so the nice thing about David's example for us is that he doesn't listen to whatever fears he might have. He doesn't listen to his own family members. He doesn't listen to the naysayers who say it can't be done. He doesn't even listen to Saul, who seems to be somewhat understanding of his interest, but less involved in believing in what he's going to be able to accomplish. He cuts through all the fat of that faithlessness. And one thing is crystal clear through the whole story, from David's perspective and from David's mouth. This affront is against God, not against us. This battle is not ours, it's God's. And because of that, it's not ours to win, it's God's to win through us. And the power that'll win it is not us, it's God through us. Now, everything David says is along the line of what I just paraphrased. Every word he utters is along those same ideas, along those same lines. This assault of the Philistines and this defiance of Goliath, it wasn't against the armies of Israel. It was against the armies, as David says, of God. The challenge was not as much against the peoples in the armies of Saul as it was the nation of God's people. And that's the way David framed it. And that's the way David saw it. And that's the way David fought against Goliath with that mindset. And so using that understanding of what the battle really involved, he cut through all the fat of what his fears might have been, what his family was saying, what his other fellow Israelites were saying about the situation. And unlike them, who were completely overwhelmed by their dismay, by their fear, he cuts through all of that with an endearing and unrelenting confidence that God's will be done. In some cases, we don't know what that is. And there are other stories in Scripture that play this out in better fashion than this one does. where we just have to say, as others have, God's will be done. It's past ours to understand. But in this, it was clear what God's will was. God's will was for God's nation of Israel to survive and to thrive, because he had spoken words to that effect throughout chapters and books before this one. It was not God's plan for his nation to fall and to fail and the seed promise to collapse. And so David knows it is the will of God for the Philistines to be defeated. In fact, God had ordered this to happen long before. David knew that. And so David did what we know David did. He took that stone. But notice something else. Understanding that, what would seem to make sense becomes senseless, and what is senseless seems to make sense. And that is going to the armor he doesn't wear and the sling he ends up going to battle with. That seems to make no sense. Just like when God finally had his will known and shown through Gideon and his army. That army was so small, that's the way God wanted it. That's why Naaman dipped 7 times in a muddy river, which would seem to have nothing to do with a cure for leprosy, but it worked because God said it. And God wants it known every time that what happens is not because of our ingenuity, our ability, our inventiveness, our doggedness, our determination, or our work skills. He wants us to know we have success because God has empowered us to do what we're able to do. And didn't Paul say it's God who works in you both the will and to do of his good pleasure? Well, David believed that. And so when you look at things from a sensible standpoint, you'd say, well, a young boy with no battle experience against a Goliath of a man would be going at him without any kind of armor. But that would seem to make sense to see it that way. But once you put God into the equation, the senseless makes sense. The less David's prepared, the more he is ready. The less he has played chess along the way, making this move to have this happen, the more he just trusts God, the better things turn out. He knows that, believes that. And one last thought this evening, the reason for his thinking along this line, and this is what we should all take to heart, is that when he starts talking about this, he tells the stories of killing the lion and the bear. And in the telling of that, he makes it very clear that it's not David who has done it, but God who did it through David. Look at verse number 37. Moreover, David said, he's speaking to Saul, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." David had his faith firmly in God because he had a history. History feeds faith. History really doesn't feed fear, unless it's a perverted history. And your being here this evening proves it. Oh, yes, but. I know. You could be a billionaire in a billionaire's mansion. I realize you could be somewhere else, somebody else, living somebody else's life. But you're here where you are, and by some means, and I know what those means have been, God's providence working in your life, you've gotten to where you are. You face some difficult, if not impossible, circumstances already. The trouble with many of us is once we have a battle and we win it, we forget how we won it. We don't give thanks for the victory. Instead, we move on and worry about the next problem down the road. Instead, David remembered, you know what? God's been with me before. And it wasn't me that killed that lion. It wasn't me that killed that bear. God was doing it through me. If God can do that, what can God not do? You see, a good objective history feeds your faith. Instead of asking forward looking, what could go wrong? Look in backward vision, how has God made things to this point work out for good? And in every case, we'll say, well, there have been bumps along the road. There's been difficulties to overcome. There have been challenges to face. But God has seen me to this point in life, which means I've killed my share of lions and bears already. Why worry and fear about the future instead of having faith based upon the past? God has been good. He will be good. And at this moment, He is a good God. The Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting. His truth endures to all generations. And so I hope these 52 verses, if put perhaps in some perspective of our own lives, can make a difference. The only thing in which I was not completely truthful this evening was this. I think I went a bit over 20 minutes. Appreciate so much your indulgence and your interest. And let's all of us, regardless what we're facing, put God's will as paramount. Submit completely to Him. And in faith, move forward. Fear helps nothing. Worry helps nothing. Anxiety helps nothing. Faith changes everything. In fact, John says this is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. If you're outside of Christ this evening, change that by obeying the gospel. Or if, as a child of God, you've strayed, come back and come forward as together we stand and sing.